Welcome to the program, listeners. You are listening to the extended news at noon on WISR 680 AM 107.5 FM. I'm Tyler Friel. I'm very excited about our guest on the program today, and this is actually the second time that she's been on the show. The previous time was after she released her book called The Ghost, The Murder of Police Chief Greg Adams and the Search for His Killers. Her name is Maureen Boyle. She's a professor at Stonehill College in Easton, Massachusetts. She joins us by telephone. Maureen, thanks for taking the time and welcome back to the show.
Oh, thanks for having me. I really appreciate it. It's always a joy to be talking to you guys.
So,
wish I was there in person.
Yeah, me too, but we're glad to have you by telephone. So you have a new book out. The new book is called Child Last Seen. And we were corresponding via email, and we were even chatting before we hopped on air here, Maureen. This was a story that I was not familiar with, but one I'm sure that some of our listeners are familiar with it. And this is about the cold case of Patty Desmond. So let's start there. If you could describe this case for our listeners, what do they need to know about this?
It was 1965, December of 1965. Patty Desmond was 15 years old. She came from a large family living in Renfrew. Her mother was widowed. There were six kids in the family. Mother was a very hardworking woman. And on this December, she had an argument with her mother. Her mother didn't approve of a man that she was hanging around with. It was someone who was older than her, 19-year-old. Individual who was out of school, married, and with a child. Patty, of course, was 15 and a sophomore in high school. And of course, you know, when you're older, that type of age difference isn't a big deal. But when you are in high school and someone is out of high school and is 19 and married, it is a wide range. It's wide range of experience, so wide range of life skills. And 15-year-old girls are extremely naive. They think they know it all, but they really don't. So her mother did not approve of hanging around with this individual. His name was Conrad Miller, and he had a police record. That was the other thing that her mother did not approve of. So she had a fight with her mother. Mother says, "I stay away from him. Don't want you hanging around with him." Patty went into the basement, and he snuck out of the house and met up with Miller, who drove by with some friends, hopped in his car, and that was the last time her family saw her alive. Miller had dropped off his friends, pledging to meet up later on. He took Patty to a mine area, and he claimed that she said she was pregnant. What he says it wasn't his. There's no proof, of course. I want to make this clear, especially since Patty isn't here to defend herself, that there is no evidence other than his statements that Patty was pregnant at the time. Patty, of course, never came home. He claimed that he dropped her off at a fire hall because she wanted to go visit a friend of hers. But that was the last time he saw her. Police the next day, after Patty was reported missing by her mother, they interviewed him extensively, interviewed her friend that supposedly she was supposed to meet up with, go to her house. She never arrived. They talked to a number of people at the time, and the last person known to have seen Patty was this individual by the name of Conrad Miller. He, of course, was the key suspect in her disappearance, but there was no proof that he was involved with her disappearance, that he had done anything to her at that time. Because keep in mind, this is 1965, so people aren't using cell phones. 1965, there aren't surveillance cameras everywhere. 1965, vehicles do not have GPS in them. So what police had to rely on is the information they received from witnesses. A couple of years later, Patty's sister had approached someone that she knew in the criminal justice system to say, hey, are people still looking for my sister? And the state police got involved at that point. And we opened up the case again, re-interviewed witnesses, interviewed additional witnesses, and still came up short. No one knew where Patty was. Many of the investigators believed that Miller was involved somehow with her disappearance, but they couldn't prove it. They re-interviewed him, of course, and he fell back on the same story he told originally. It wasn't until the 80s that someone came forward with key information that led to the discovery of Patty's remains. And what is interesting about this case, which I found really fascinating, it goes beyond just being a cold case. It is a story about a community, of high morals. People, you have to remember, people may not be wealthy in terms of money, but people are wealthy in terms of their values, their morals, their family ties. And the wealthy in terms of doing the right thing for the community and for others. And that is the key in this case. The person who came forward did so at great, not quite risk, but it was very difficult for the individual for other people to think that this individual to come forward, although the person did not feel that it was all that difficult because it was the right thing to do. And this is a story both of finding justice for Patty and the sense of in the community that people do the right thing even if they don't know them. And that's what happened in this case. You know, the person came forward, did not know Patty Desmond, was a child when Patty Desmond went missing, did not know the Desmond family, but still felt there had to be justice for this teenager. There had to be some type of justice served for her family. And also for the community, because, and this is something I have always felt, both as a reporter and now writing books, true crime books, is that people cannot get away with murder. And even if it takes decades, justice has to be done. And killers have got to be identified, and they do have to be brought to justice. And unfortunately, in Saxonburg, with murder of Greg Adams, while they did identify the killer, it took decades to figure out where the killer was. So there really wasn't justice for Greg Adams. In this case, there was some justice for Patty, and that is in part due to strong individuals in the community. And also what I also found fascinating about this is this case is the science that was used at the time in the 1980s to find her, and the determination of a group of grad students at the time from the University of Pittsburgh who were tasked with helping the state police find Patty. And many of those individuals are now really acclaimed in their field. Yeah. So this is also a story of how some of the experts started in the field too.
And that's what I was going to ask, you know, as you've reported on these stories in our area, because I guess we should tell the listeners you're not from Butler, but now you've written two books about it. I want to talk first about the investigators. How does things change from Patty's disappearance in 1965 to when they make and discover her body in the 1980s? What changes in cold case investigations? What else happens during that time that is able to help them and really move this process forward?
That's a very good question. In this case in particular, because it was solved in the 1980s, I mean, things will be different today, thanks to DNA. But back, particularly ancestral DNA, and you know, what many cases today are solved with. Back then, what helped solve this case was both the determination of the investigators, but also people coming forward. And as much as we all like to think that science is going to solve all crimes, that's not the case. It is our responsibility to help and help solve these cases. It is people in a community who help find justice for the dead. And that was the key in this. In the beginning, they did not have anyone coming forward who could say, this is exactly what happened. The suspect at the time had made references that he had done Patty harm, but the stories kept changing and people didn't believe him. State police and the local police were aware of what this guy was saying, but they had no secondary proof to say, okay, here's a body, here's remains. We have some physical proof to back up these secondhand reports. But once they got additional information decades later, they were able to use and build a case using bringing some of those other pieces in. So what changed in the 1980s was a very courageous individual who came forward and helped break the case.
So again, our guest, Maureen Boyle, the book is Child Last Seen, The Cold Case of Patty Desmond, and this is available on Amazon, Books A Million, or contact your local bookstore, and they'll help you order that book. So Conrad Miller, is there any other suspects during this case, or police pretty much settled that this is the guy, and to your earlier point, there's just not evidence to officially connect him to the disappearance?
He was the prime suspect from day one and continued to be the prime suspect. There was no one else that was on the radar at that time.
Was that common in cold cases for investigators to identify that suspect early on, but there's just a lack of evidence to officially charge that suspect with any crime?
I would say probably 50-50. Back in my newspaper reporting days, when I covered cops and courts and covered a fair number, maybe far too many murder cases and a fair number of cold cases or unsolved cases, in many cases, investigators do have a strong suspect in the case. Many times the killer is somewhere buried in a police report. Not all the time, but many times they are. But there isn't enough evidence, and they can't press charges. The average person will go, well, if you think you know who it is, arrest him. Put those cuffs on him and haul him into court. The problem with that is unless you have a very solid case, a killer could go free because prosecutors only have one shot at trying someone for murder. The person is acquitted, found not guilty by a jury, and later on, additional evidence is unearthed that positively identifies this individual as a killer beyond a reasonable doubt. They cannot bring charges, murder charges again against the individual. That's called double jeopardy. So, in this case, knowing who suspecting who the killer is, as in many murder cases, isn't enough. Mere suspicion is not enough. And a lot of investigators and detectives will tell you, often they have a good idea of who a killer is, but they can't prove it.
How did you find this story?
That's a very good question. When I was researching the final days of the research on the book, The Ghost, I was talking to Danny McKnight, who was a young trooper at the time when Chief Adams was killed. He was a road trooper. And I had interviewed him for the Ghost. And he mentioned to me, you know, you should do something on this case. And I said, yeah, but I need a lot of information. I always have a number of people go, oh, this will be a great story. This would be a great story. But you need, for books, you need a lot of information, a lot of reports. And I always need to know that there is a lot of backup information to develop a book-length story. And he had a good amount of information already. And also Glenn Hall, who also worked on the case, had had some information, and very good. The two of them had unbelievably great memories, as did another of the investigators, Schwartzlander. So I went through some preliminary reports and information that was made available to me. And I thought, you know, I let it simmer a bit because I was wrapping up The Ghost and then doing some book events after that. But when I dived into this case, I found it really fascinating, started making additional calls. I returned to the Butler area and interviewed all of the investigators, went to the scene where Patty was found, went to the area where Miller eventually was living, went by where Patty had been living at the time. The house was gone, and that area is no longer, doesn't look the same. But I got a feel for the general area and learned a lot about mining too in the process because, you know, living in New England, we don't have mines up here. And I had, you know, you have this whole different image of particular strip mining. And when I actually saw some of the locations, I'm so glad that I did because it gave me a much better image and sense of what the area looked like at that time. So that's how I discovered it. You know, long story short, or a short story long, that's how I found out about this case and got interested in it. Also quite, you know, fascinated by the lack of news articles about her disappearance. Just as with The Ghost, when about Chief Adams' murder, there was a lot of information in the Pennsylvania papers and, the Butler Eagle about the murder of Chief Adams, and up here in Massachusetts, there where the killer was from, there was like basically zilch. No one even knew that this, you know, guy from Massachusetts was accused of the chief's murder. And I was very surprised with the murder, with the disappearance of Patty. There was really nothing until the case was eventually resolved. And I kept on, that bothered me because today, a kid goes missing, and everyone knows about it. There's Amber Alert, and there's things posted on social media, and people are mentioning it on the radio and in the newspapers. We're all very much aware of a missing child. And I consider someone who is 15 a child. So I'm like, how could this be? How could there not be all of that be no attention to the case back then. But then they kept on doing more and more work. You know, you have to go back to the time, 1965, a different era where, you know, we didn't have Amber Alerts. There wasn't any, you know, databases of missing individuals. And in 1965, teenagers in particular were almost universally considered runaways. And there was an awful lot of teenagers who would leave home and, you know, go off to California or go someplace else. This was, you know, the start of the era of, you know, flower children. And that was, it was a different mindset during that period of time. And law enforcement treated missing children very, very different than they do today, particularly teenagers. Now, that's not to say that they did not investigate her disappearance, because just as soon as she was reported missing, the Butler Township Police did make inquiries and did interview a number of people, including Conrad Miller.
Again, our guest is Maureen Boyle, the novel's Child Last Seen, The Disappearance of Patty Desmond. And to your point as well, I noticed that in just some preliminary research for this interview, that there was, you know, sometimes, like you said, you can Google the murder of Chief Adams and you can find all these news stories. It's difficult to find anything just on the internet straight up about this particular case.
That I found fascinating. And I think that is why really spurred me on to do the book.
Mm-hmm.
Because I wanted her voice and her story to be told to people. People will remember her, not to forget her. I did not want her and her family's pain to be just a little blip in the community. I wanted people to know what happened to her, that she did live, that someone took her young life away. You know, who knows what she could have contributed to the community had she lived.
As you, in your reporting career and just keeping track of, you know, the stories that you have found in this area, I mean, I know of a couple of other cold cases in the Butler area where there's just no knowledge of. Is this something that you would say is typical of communities? Would you say communities everywhere, all across the country, have these cold case stories, or is it something unique to towns?
It's everywhere. It really is everywhere, because people's memories are short, and when you know that someone, a body has been found, and you know that it's definitely a murder, people have a tendency to remember some of the facts of the case. But in the case of a disappearance, it does fade from memory very, very quickly. And you will find that in communities everywhere, large and small. And even in cases where, you know, someone has been killed and they, it's definitely a murder, they've been identified, and over a period of time, no one's been caught, and it does fade from people's memories. I can think of three cold cases up in this area involving teenagers who went missing in the 1970s, including one who still hasn't been found. And if you said their name today, people would say, "Well, didn't know anything about that case." So it is everywhere. It is everywhere. And that is why it's so important to have a cold case unit in the state and in a region where there are dedicated individuals working only on cold cases. Because these are very difficult cases. They have to be approached in a completely different way than for lack of a better word, a fresh murder.
Well,
because they have to delve back into time, and they have to look at reports, and they have got to maybe look at a case slightly differently than the original investigators, because they're able to look at it with some distance. But it's also difficult because witnesses die.
So again, for listeners, the story of Patty Desmond, maybe you're familiar with it, maybe you're not, but it is a fascinating read by Maureen Boyle. The title of the book is Child Last Seen. You can get it on Amazon, Books A Million, or again, just contact your local bookstore. Maureen, thanks for taking the time. Always appreciate you coming on, and best of luck with the novel.
Good. Well, thank you so much, and it's always a pleasure to talk to everyone at the station. It's a great, provide a great service to the community, and I hope people continue to tune in. And thank you again. Thank you very much for having me on.
Again, Maureen Boyle, the book Child Last Seen on the Disappearance of Patty Desmond. If you missed any of our program, you can go back and re-listen to it at WISR680.com. Also, the extended news at noon is on Spotify. I'm Taylor Frill saying so long for now. You are listening to WISR.